It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore a bankruptcy tactic to potentially shield executives from liability as the U.S. Supreme Court blocks a nationwide settlement with opioid banker Purdue Pharma. Wisconsin's Attorney General announced 2 years ago a proposed resolution of our state's bankruptcy claims against the Sackler family and their company, Purdue Pharma. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234. Email questions about bankruptcy to ideas@WPR.org. Ralph Anzavino is a Marquette University Law School professor teaching business bankruptcy law. Ralph, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Morning, Kate. Good to talk with you.
Good morning. So the Supreme Court temporarily blocking Purdue Pharma from a $6 billion bankruptcy deal that would have shielded the Sackler family from future opioid lawsuits. Why would justices block this deal?
I think this is a common problem or issue in all bankruptcies. We experienced this same issue here in Wisconsin in the Archdiocese of Milwaukee case, where the claimants, the plaintiffs, same as in this case with Purdue Pharma, the issue is are you putting in enough money in order to be able to have the court approve the bankruptcy plan? And there are four basic circumstances that put a business in bankruptcy or reorganization. And one of them is what we call tort litigation, which is some kind of litigation that's going on. And we know that what's driving the Purdue bankruptcy is tort litigation because of the OxyContin. And so this is a common issue in every bankruptcy where the problem that the business is trying to solve is tort litigation. And so I think, as you mentioned, the Sackler family was going to put in $6 billion. And in return for that, they were going to get a no suit. In other words, no one could sue them. What happens is, and this all started with Johns Manville, when Johns Manville had all the asbestos problems, and there were also tons and tons of lawsuits. And so what happens is, the way this is solved is they create a trust, and this is not just in the Purdue case, but in every case where there's tort litigation. They create a trust and they put X amount of dollars in the trust, and then they tell all the plaintiffs, all the claimants, all the litigants, you have to go and sue this trust and prove your case, and then you'll receive monies. So the magic question is, and this is this is all actuarial, mm-hmm. How many plaintiffs do we have, mm-hmm. and how much do you think they're going to recover? And that would determine how much money you're going to put into that trust fund. And so the issue is, as it was in the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, where we had all that litigation, is how much money do we put into this trust? And then what happens is all the litigation kind of leaves the business, and the business puts the money into the trust, and then all the litigants go over and litigate in the trust. And then they appoint a person to kind of manage that trust. And so they do this in every case where there's litigation. So over the years, think of the Archdiocese, think of the asbestos with Johns Manville, the Dow Corning suits with the breast implants, Johnson & Johnson right now with baby powder. So the real simple answer, I realize that was more than you wanted.
But no, that's okay.
The simple answer is get out the dart and let's throw it at the target. And how much money do we need? I mean, you're talking about, you know, how many known plaintiffs are there? How much should they fairly recover? How long is it going to take? Do they have good cases? Do they have bad cases? And so that's the issue the Supreme Court is going to be looking at, is whether the Sacklers, in order to receive immunity from future litigation, they have to put in X amount of dollars. And the question is $6 billion the number? That's the issue.
And we'll get to the Archdiocese of Milwaukee in a moment. But going back to the person managing the trust, because isn't it the U.S. trustee who filed this suit, the Justice Department's, you know, bankruptcy watchdog? And I'm just wondering, you know, who are they and what are they doing here in this particular case?
Well, yes, the government is involved in it.
Yeah.
And the U.S. trustee is what I guess we would call the ombudsman.
Okay.
They're supposed to keep an eye on things and make sure they represent the public at large and make sure that this is a fair and a treatment, that this entity is getting treated like all others. And so that's who's raising the issue. Interestingly, in your question, you ask who will be the person that will monitor this fund.
Yes.
If they get, and they will get to a, they will get to a number, then the number will be whatever the number is. I've been asked on several occasions to be that person to monitor those funds. The most recent one was mesothelioma. And I kind of backed off on that. I chose not to do that. That's going to be a, that's a very tough job. You can imagine, how do I know how much money to pay person X when they prove their case, but yet have enough money left over for some other person that might come down the road? I mean, how many plaintiffs do we know are going to come out of the woodwork once this thing is set up, right? I mean, it's almost an impossible task to decide that. And so that's the purpose of the U.S. trustee, is saying, I don't think this is enough money, right? That's their that's what they're saying. And then the Sacklers and their counsel are going to say, well, we anticipate X amount of people. You're saying it's much larger. We're saying it's much smaller. I mean, that's why we have court systems to figure out exactly what that is, because you can't go back. You can't go back and say, well, in 2023, we kind of missed the target. Now you got to pony up another $5 billion. So this is a one and done. So they got to get it right.
The Justice Department says the Sackler family is using Chapter 11 bankruptcy to protect family members from more lawsuits. How common is that strategy among Chapter 11 filers?
Oh, it's exceedingly common. I mean, that's the whole, as far as the people who are kind of satellites around the case, they want to be insulated. They want to say, okay, I'm here. Maybe I have, maybe I don't have responsibility. That's a legal question, but we're willing to get it resolved by putting in X amount of dollars. So this is in every case that where you have, remember, tort litigation.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what the person is putting the money in. That's what they're paying basically to get the insulation from future litigation.
And if the Sacklers are successful at shielding themselves from future lawsuits, what could that mean for Wisconsin communities hoping to receive settlement money in the years to come?
Well, it's pretty much the same question. That is obviously those communities want the Sacklers to put in as much money as would cover all the claims that they might have.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really hard for, you know, none of us have a crystal ball. So we don't know how much that is. We don't know how many other claimants. Remember, not only besides the communities, you have individuals and family members who died. I mean, these are serious claims here. And so it's looking at that crystal ball, trying to figure out. And it's not anything unusual. It's in all the cases I mentioned to you: Dow Corning, Johns Manville, Johnson & Johnson with their baby powders. That's the same issue. So that issue comes up. It's the same issue in the Archdiocese case. How much money should we put in to solve the tort litigants?
We're talking about business bankruptcies with Ralph Anzavino, who is a Marquette University Law School professor. You can join in the conversation, call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234. Ralph, Chapter 11 standard bankruptcy code for most businesses. When would a business want or need to file under Chapter 11?
That's one of the magic questions. In fact, that's the answer to that question is the one thing that most businesses, and when I talk about businesses, I'm not talking about GM or the large Walmart, the large companies. Here in Wisconsin, we basically have small to medium-sized businesses. And so it's the same for you and I as individuals. And that is okay, I have money coming in, I have money going out. And when you get to the point where you no longer can handle the stress and the financial demands of what situation you're in, you have to seek help. And so you do that when you're an individual by filing for bankruptcy relief or seeking bankruptcy help. And the same thing for a business. And what happens is it's not so much critical for individuals, but for businesses, you have to do it sooner rather than later. And the big mistake for businesses is to wait too long, because the longer you wait, the less opportunity there will be for your bankruptcy attorney to kind of help you correct the problem. And remember, we've only talked about one of the problems, mm-hmm. and that's tort litigation. There's several others, which are the primary causes for why a business files for bankruptcy relief. And so the major problem is the bankruptcy attorney will normally say to the business client, geez, I wish you would have come in last year when things weren't as dire as they are now. And so and your question is when is that moment? The only one that's going to know that is you or I when we're individuals, or a business person. This is what they do. This is their life. This is what they own. Mm-hmm. This is what they do every day when they get up and they think about every night when they go to bed. And so you have to exercise good judgment and say, you know, I don't see any light at the end of this tunnel. I don't know what's going to happen. Short of a miracle, I think we need somebody to help us. And so that's the million-dollar question is, and again, the best response is sooner rather than later.
Ralph Anzavino teaches business bankruptcy at Marquette University Law School as we look at the implications of bankruptcy protections on firms. And you can be part of this discussion along the way. Call in with a question, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine how companies may use bankruptcy courts as a way to limit liability and how some firms continue operations after going through the process. There's room to discuss aspects of business bankruptcy in Wisconsin and beyond. Call in with a question or concern, 800-642-1234. We have Marquette University Law School Professor Ralph Anzavino, who is here. Let's bring in Jane in Suamico. Jane, hi. What would you like to bring up?
I'd ask him to speak to the strange way the laws are written where credit card debt and student loan debt cannot be absolved when people go bankrupt.
Jane, thanks for that. And that sounds like personal bankruptcy, Ralph.
Sure. No. Yeah, no problem. let's see. Let's separate those two things out. First of all, credit card debt. Let's talk about that one first. Credit card debt is probably the most common debt that one has when one files for bankruptcy, and that is dischargeable. So that you need to remember that. So that is a dischargeable debt. Sometimes those debts might not be dischargeable if, for example, you used your credit card to buy what the law calls luxury goods. So in other words, you can't go out and buy some jewelry and then go on your credit card and then go file bankruptcy. That the courts are going to say, no, you know, the credit card was to be, you know, food, clothing, shelter, essential things, not luxury goods. So 99.9%, that's why when you go in to talk to a bankruptcy lawyer, they will ask you to bring in your credit card bills because they want to look and see whether you've been purchasing luxury goods. That's one of the reasons. There's a number of others. Now, student loans, when I first came to Marquette in 76, and when I was practicing, I came from Ohio and then came to Wisconsin, which I, by the way, I love dearly. Student loans were dischargeable when I first started practicing law, but then Congress decided that we didn't want to finance that. And so that was your individual personal choice to spend the money to get this better education, which therefore theoretically would lead to a better job. And so Congress made student loan debt non-dischargeable, but it's not an impossible task. Even student loan debt can be discharged if you can show hardship. And so there, if you can show to the court, judge, we call it the Bruner test in, under the law, but if you can show that the person has limited income and they're pretty much where they're going to be, in other words, there's no prospect to make a lot more money, and they're going to be pretty much stuck in this situation, the court could discharge the debt because it's going to be a hardship for this person going forward. So that's where both credit cards and student debt are. So credit cards, remember, that debt is dischargeable. So you want to make sure you understand that. Mm-hmm. For all people listening, you can, yes, you can get, that's one of the reasons why you're there. And then of course, student loans is also can be discharged, but generally you start the opposite, and that is it's not dischargeable unless you can prove otherwise. I hope that was helpful.
That was helpful. Let's turn to the State Department of Justice saying it wants to see records of the Milwaukee Archdiocese sealed in a 2011 bankruptcy filing. And the department says the records are part of its investigation into sexual abuse by faith leaders. Why could bankruptcy records be under seal?
Well, I don't think there's any difference for bankruptcy records than any other records. You have that debate going on now in a lot of Donald Trump's litigation as to whether things should be sealed or not be sealed. And whether it's bankruptcy court or tax court or civil court, it doesn't really matter. It's the same exact concept. And that is there really some basis or some primary reason why these records should be kept from the public? Frankly, in my opinion, and I'm not involved in the dispute, I don't know what possible good reason there would be. Depends, I guess, on what was sealed. Mm-hmm. I don't know I don't know exactly what the argument is on why those records were sealed. There was obviously some reason why the bankruptcy judge did that. And now the question is the demand for those records greater than, of course, what the reason was originally to seal them? And I don't know.
Sure. I wonder, is there precedent for state, you know, justice departments to get access to confidential claims that are sealed in bankruptcy courts? You know, can a justice department get that access and be looped in?
Well, the answer to that is, can I convince the judge, right? I mean, the answer is always yes. But then you have to go to court and convince the judge that your reason for seeking those records is greater than the reason. And, you know, after the passage of time, I'm trying to think now, it must be 10 to 15 years now. And of course, my time may be wrong, but it's been quite a while since the Archdiocese case closed up. So maybe with the passage of time, the demand or the reason for that isn't as great as it once was. So I guess we're going to find out. That's going to be a decision by the bankruptcy court. And then, of course, it'll be, I assume it'll be appealed from there.
Ralph Anzavino with us, Marquette University Law School professor, as we talk about business bankruptcies and the like. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Ralph, turning to farm bankruptcies, last year WPR says Wisconsin saw a 72% decline in farm bankruptcies from the previous year. Is that a reliable measure for how farms are doing currently?
Well, that I think in a general principle, yes. But remember, the one caveat that I suggested to you is that many people who should file bankruptcy wait. It's just there's something in us. It's like going to the doctor. A lot of people just wait too long to go to the doctor. And there's something in us that says, okay, I'm going to get up tomorrow morning. I'm going to do the same thing I did yesterday. And so... Yes, that's true. I agree. As a general principle, that means it probably that we're not doing as badly as one might suspect. On the other hand, and I don't know, I assume you followed that story, we had millions of gallons of milk just spilled into the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewage District in the last, I'd have to say the last 30 days or 40 days. And so there is some tension, there is some problem in the system, at least for on the dairy side of it. So like everything else, it's all been in flux. Almost all bank, you mentioned that the farm bankruptcies are down. On the other hand, Chapter 11 bankruptcies are way up. They're up to 70% in the last 6 months. So
What
you're
might be
seeing,
that due to? We only have,
well,
about 30 seconds left here. Why would you see such an uptick there?
I think it was the pandemic. My son lost his restaurant it due to the pandemic. So I think everybody knows somebody who lost their business. Certainly restaurants were probably the most difficult, most hit the worst in because they had to close up. So a lot of businesses were just destroyed by the pandemic. And so I think we're seeing the reverberations and the echoes of the pandemic still in our system.
I wonder very quickly here, what will you be watching for when oral arguments are expected to happen in the appeal of the Purdue Pharma settlement?
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see what the arguments are about regarding the number of plaintiffs that they expect, because remember, it's all about that number. It's all about
It's
that
all,
6 billion.
yeah.
And so it's going to be that calculation by an actuarial person saying, okay, we think this is the number that it should be, and therefore there should be 20 billion, that kind of thing.
Ralph, thank you for joining us.
No problem. I enjoyed it.
Ralph Anzavino, professor teaching business bankruptcy law at Marquette University Law School. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.